This week on Lunchbox Envy, it was the first meal eaten on the moon.
The Norse gods had a magical pig called Saehrimnir that provided unlimited amounts of it.
And in Indiana, there used to be a special lottery with scented tickets in which you could win a 20-year supply.
Oh. It's bacon! Hello and welcome to Lunchbox Envy. I'm Alex and I'm here with my fellow QI elves, Jack and Manu. Hello.
Hi, how's it going?
Can I just make a confession straight out the bat? I don't really like bacon and I don't really eat bacon.
Ooh.
I'm slightly with you, Alex. I think it's very overhyped. And for me, it's incredibly salty. And I don't think I'm a fan of the smokiness. I'm obviously, you can get unsmoked and unsmoked.
I mean, you're sounding pretty salty right
we'll
now.
Come that. Yeah, I'd always take a sausage for breakfast. Mm-hmm. People rave about the smell, don't they? So much.
Yeah.
I love it. As a born Muslim in a Muslim family, that was the one food I was like, I fucking know that's good. I can smell it. And then when I first tried it, I was like, oh my God, it is as good as I thought it was going to be. And it's the only pig product my mum misses, apparently.
Oh.
She's like, doesn't really care, but bacon and like a bacon sarnie.
So she converted to Islam?
Yeah, yeah. So she's tried it. She has tasted the devil's meat.
Yeah.
So bacon, what is it and where does it come from?
Yeah, it's usually from the back or the belly.
Oh, sorry. Are you actually
part of the pig?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so where we need to, it comes from pigs, but where on the pig does it come from and which country does it come from?
Okay, so it's also not necessarily from pigs, but the bacon I think we're going to talk about today is pork bacon. Bacon kind of refers specifically to a cut of meat that's particularly fatty.
Okay.
So on the pig, it normally comes from the back or the belly. And depending on where you cut it from, it will make different kinds of bacon.
Is that where the name comes from? Bacon? It's like bacon.
Exactly.
Ah,
so,
nailed it.
Yeah, the early 14th century, bacon comes from the old French bacon and also Proto-Germanic bacon, which is literally back meat.
Oh,
so it's in the name.
I don't know about you, but there's not much meat on my back.
You're not shaped very much like a pig, though.
No, that's true.
You also don't have trotters.
For listeners at home.
Famously quite fatty.
And also commercially, you'd want to fatten up all your livestock. Mm. So they're probably more fatty than they would be in the wild.
That's a really good point I'm going to write down. I'm slowly gathering this material for a cannibalism episode I really want to do one day. And I actually found quite a lot this week, but that's a really good question. Is what would a human look like if it was bred for eating?
Well, as in centuries of
breeding. Because we have made these fucking weird square boxy cows.
Yeah, meat and
huge spherical chickens that can't fly and
we're
stuff.
We're supposed to taste like pork.
Yeah, apparently we do taste like pork, and the sources for that are based on historical records from times of sort of horrific wars and cults and stuff where people have reported and actually tried it, but then also analysis of the chemical composition of people.
Okay.
And in 2006, there was a project where scientists developed a robotic taste tester that was designed to identify the flavor profiles in food using electrical sensors. And one of them jokingly tested it on his own skin and the robot was like, bacon! And it's based on the electric conductivity and the salt content. So we might not actually taste like bacon, but we look like we taste like bacon based on our ingredients.
So, but there are different kinds of pork bacon.
Uh-huh.
So the basic types are back. So
which comes from the back.
Yeah, so it's the one that's really popular in the UK. It's the one that we've been frying up today. It's like a big, chunky, medallion-y bit and then the little tail at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And then
looks like Austria, if you can picture Austria.
Yes.
Thanks for useful. No one else knows what Austria looks like.
Well, now we know.
That's actually, sorry, this is maybe really stupid, but I've never thought about how the slice comes out of an animal. I've always, in my mind, subconsciously thought that you sort of slice it lengthways off.
Oh.
Whereas actually, it's more like slices of bread off the back.
It's like the spines.
Yeah,
here.
It's half of the top of a back.
Exactly.
So it's like you might get left-handed or right-handed bacon, basically.
Yeah.
Wow. And then there's streaky, which is the American favourite. It's the one with loads of lines. So that's taken from the belly.
And it's much more like uniform in terms of its geometry.
Mm-hmm.
It's more like Chile.
Oh, wow.
It's a country.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like a bookmark or something.
Yeah.
I use only streaky bacon for my bookmarks.
And then there's a medallion.
Oh, yeah.
Which is back bacon, but basically all the tasty bits chopped off. So it's like they've taken the fat off and also that tail. So it's like a kind of perfect boop.
And that looks a lot like the island of Barbados.
I'm going to build Jack a bacon map of the world for his birthday.
That's so
that's
cute.
Lovely. And then you have chops, which is also back bacon, but it's just thicker slices.
Okay. Yeah, so I guess what distinguishes pork from bacon, as far as I found in my research, is cured. So
yeah,
it's basically salted and often smoked, but mm-hmm. you don't have to, to the point where it can last for a long time, right?
And what is smoking?
When you smoke bacon, you sort of leave it to hang whilst you light a fire under it. So it's cold smoked, so it's not like...
So it's not being cooked, but it's
yeah, exactly. It's not been cooked. But I think what differs...
It's what happens when you stand out in a smoking area for too
exactly,
long.
Yeah, yeah
exactly.
You get lightly smoked. Mm-hmm. But I think what defines bacon and distinguishes it from ham or salami, for instance, is mm-hmm. you can't eat it raw. Whereas with ham and salami, you can eat them raw.
Mm-hmm.
Salami hasn't been cooked, it's just been extra cured. Mm-hmm. So you can eat it raw.
Yeah.
Right.
And ham has been cooked yeah. and salted.
But yeah. does then not curing, it's not kind of cooking then?
So there are types of bacon. So this is one of the things. I was convinced Dutch people ate raw bacon and they were all gonna die.
Yeah.
And then I realized it's because theirs is super duper smoked. So that is actually cooked. Ooh. And you can eat that without cooking it further.
Yeah.
One of the things I did find out about how it's made is there are two ways to cure bacon. So one is a like dry rub.
Uh-huh.
The other one is wet, so like in brine, or you inject it with salty water. And that's what all of the weird white stuff coming off of your sizzling bacon is.
Oh, it's just salty water.
Yeah, it's just
water.
Like the wet brine.
Check out your the water content on the backs of your packet of bacon, because they do vary quite a lot.
Yeah.
On Dutch bacon, it's called speck. And Specsavers, the British opticians, uh-huh. were opening a branch in the Netherlands in 1997.
Yeah.
And they just went through with it, even though they were told, like, you know, this means bacon savers. And they're like, yeah, well, you know, we'll lean into it. And so now there are a few branches in the Netherlands called Specsavers.
Nice. That's quirky. Yes. Well, I have a really weird segue on the word speck and short-sightedness.
Uh-huh.
In medieval Germany, bats were believed to love bacon.
Bats bacon.
And
bats
in some dialects, in some German dialects, they were even called speckmouse, which literally means bacon mouse.
I love that.
And there is a story, it's a bit of a legend, but like there are a few sources for it. In the 19th century, some German naturalists tested this out by basically capturing some bats and putting them on a bacon-only diet. And they all died of starvation.
That's so
fun. Do we know who first made bacon?
So we think it was from China. 3,500 years ago, they made a kind of salted, brined, preserved pork belly.
Mm.
And then the Romans were like, this is amazing. Mm, and then really? Other countries started making it similarly. And it was a really important peasant food across Europe because...
It's cheap.
Pigs are easy to keep.
All the like quote-unquote peasant dishes like carbonara all have whole hog bacon in.
Mm-hmm. And it lasts a really long time. Without refrigeration is really important.
Refrigeration.
Exactly.
I actually didn't know whether we, like, which pigs we eat, males versus females. It turns out that we do eat both, but if we eat female pigs, they tend to be at the end of their breeding life.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So they'll probably be older and their meat will be tougher and leaner. And so they'll probably be used in more processed products.
Oh.
So maybe not so much bacon. But the male pigs, we also only eat castrated versions.
Oh, okay.
And this is because of something called taint. Have you heard of taint?
I have not. Not in this context.
Strap in, it's disgusting. So like boar taint is this very like unpleasant odor or taste that can appear like in the meat that comes from uncastrated male pigs. There's mainly two compounds that cause it. It's androstenone, which is a sex hormone, and scatol, which is the it's a byproduct. It's a byproduct of the digestion. It builds up fat, so it's sperm and it's poo.
Perfume making, some people use scatol as a note, and it like for some reason it's amazing.
Wow.
But that is the poopy smell.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's a little bit like the beaver glands.
Yeah.
And the thing. Like, it's like it's disgusting on the one hand, but if you use it in the right way, it can be really bad.
And with Parmesan cheese, smelly vomit, like in context, it's,
But what's really interesting about boar taint is that not everyone can detect it. Like about 50% of people have a version of a specific olfactory receptor gene called OR7D4.
Okay.
And if you have that, you're sensitive to androstenone.
Wow.
Yeah. Probably none of us have it. Oh, I don't know. It might be. It, basically,
I read somewhere that it's more in women.
Yeah, I think more. Yeah. I think more women have it than men. Yeah, definitely. People who have it will find the smell absolutely revolting. Mm. Whereas everyone else, they either can't smell it at all, or they might actually find it slightly sweet and perfumed as a smell. So I guess maybe there is a way of like weakening it down for people.
Maybe your dislike of bacon comes from.
Oh, maybe
well,
you've
this
got
is the
it.
Thing. The pork industry just avoids uncastrated male because it's not worth risking people not liking your bacon because you could turn on someone off for life, or you get a lot of people thinking you got bad bacon. So as a result, it's not like. Not everywhere. You can find it in some places, but
I really
most
want to
of
find
the time,
it.
Male pigs are castrated before before eaten, and then they're trying to eliminate it with breeding programs to try and get rid of it entirely. Yeah. It's really interesting. Wow. Okay, it is time for our first lunchbox, and that is Jack.
I have brought you guys a bacon milkshake.
Ooh.
Yeah, here it is.
Oh, no.
Oh, it's got a lovely little bit of bacon in it.
Of course. I was looking into Bacon Mania, and I managed to find all sorts of products, and one of them that I could find is some bacon syrup for use in cocktails.
Ooh.
And yeah, it's made in Liverpool.
Like the Titanic. Two greatest disasters.
Oh, God.
And it's 58% sugar, so whoa. It's pretty suited to a milkshake.
Okay, should we do it together? There's three straws here.
Like... Just like friends.
Yeah, okay, let's do it. Oh, God, it's so tangy.
Ooh.
Oh, I like, you taste the vanilla and you're like, and then the bacon hits in.
Oh, yeah, it comes in waves. I'm getting like, oh, bacon. Ooh, nice. Ooh, bacon.
Whoa.
I mean, if I liked bacon, I kind of think maybe it would be okay.
But yeah, so basically, as anyone who'll have been on the internet in the last 10 years, 20 years, has noticed, Bacon Mania arrived in around 2000 and like the mid-noughties, 2005, maybe 2003, depending on where you talk to. And it's just this kind of almost fetishization of bacon. Mm-hmm. And because America's like the ultimate capitalist country, it's bled into all sorts of bacon products. So I managed to find Baconaise, mayonnaise and bacon, mm-hmm. fairly common.
Classic.
Bacon salt, again, mm-hmm. kind of, you know, interesting. Bacon gum. So like chewing gum, but bacon flavoured.
No.
Bacon plasters.
Wait, what?
So
bacon does look like plasters.
Exactly.
Who wants that?
Well, I don't know. Bacon toilet paper.
Okay.
Doesn't smell of bacon, just looks like bacon.
That's again, fun. I like that.
A bacon bra, which isn't for commercial sale, I noticed.
Wait, like
but someone weaved a bacon lattice.
Oh.
And then put them on their breasts and, like, tied a little bow.
Why didn't you make that your lunchbox?
Well, I didn't have time. Maybe, you know, in the coming week. And a bacon alarm clock that wakes you up with the smell of sizzling bacon.
Ooh, which is I saw this one,
It's a Tease Made, which we mentioned in the Tease episode. It's like the American version of a Tease Made.
Well, there were two that I saw. So the original one was called the Waken Bacon. It was built in 2009 by a design student in San Francisco called Matty Selin.
Cool.
And it was just like an alarm clock with a drawer. Mm-hmm. That you put the bacon in, and so it cooked actual bacon for you, which is just like the Tease Makes. It makes tea.
Right.
I think he tried to take it to production, but foods obviously failed all the food safety regulations. You can't cook
safety,
old bacon by your bed.
He went on Shark Tank, didn't he?
Yeah.
Did you see? Yeah.
Then there was a later one that Oscar Mayer, the company, released called in 2014 called Wake Up and Smell the Bacon, which was an iPhone attachment. So I think it plugs into your iPhone, and it's like a diffuser, and it would put out the smell of bacon in the morning, which is a classic way to wake up. And I will say, again, someone who doesn't like bacon, I do love to be woken up by the smell of bacon.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay, wow.
I read an article by Sarah Hippola, which was written in 2008, so sort of as bacon mania was reaching a peak. And she was trying to analyze why it was getting so popular. I do think it's linked to the internet.
The financial crash.
Now, I think it is A, very American, B, like the internet. If you're making a bacon bra in like 1995, it's not going to go anywhere, right? It might make the local press.
Mm-hmm.
And these days, it's quite hard to impress someone with something like that.
Yeah.
But in the early days of the internet, it was like, you remember all those I Can Has Cheeseburger memes? It was so like such a low bar to make people laugh.
I think there's no friction now. There's so much stuff that, like making a bacon bra, you do it in the past, you get sectioned, whereas now you find a kink community and make millions online. Like, there's no barrier to finding other freaks like you.
But she was like, it's decadent, it's brash, it's basically a big fuck you to healthiness, and it kind of represents religious freedom. freedom in a sort of a way, because there was quite a lot of anti-Islam sentiment since 9/11. Okay. So that's a sort of dark side. But it is untied to any nationality. Like a cheese.
It's American. It's very American.
So American.
Like brie is universally delicious, but it's very French. Whereas bacon is like...
That's true.
It's kind of transcends borders.
Isn't it just silly? It's like beans.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Like cheeseburger. It's, like basic food is funny because it's so like animalistic, I guess.
And it's, and it's kitsch. It's like there's nothing highfalutin. It's not very posh. You know, it's almost tacky and it's recognizable. It's why you can make bacon toilet roll and everyone's like, this is such a novelty, you know?
In my mind, that era, that's when food pornography took off, food porn, because those famous M&S adverts came out, the famous Marks and Spencer adverts that was like, this is not just a yogurt.
This is a
smooth, creamy poison berry. Oh yeah, and like, and then like there'd be these shots of like sultry spoon like going into an incredibly thick creamy chocolate. Everyone was like, "Why am I so turned on by M&S?"
And then at the start of the 2010s, there was also a bacon-themed dating app
and for pigs or for humans.
No, for humans, and it was called Sizzle with just like SIZZL. And it was made by Oscar Mayer, who are one of the big bacon manufacturers in the USA.
Also made the bacon clock.
Also made the bacon clock. So they're quite good at innovating. And by, well, by all accounts, this app was quite, like, it worked quite well. It had a like inbuilt chat function. It only lasted about 6 months. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there was a journalist called Emma Lord managed to match with Lamorne Morris, you know, the actor from New Girl. I know him from Game Night. On this app. And then he came in to do a little interview with them.
Wow.
Check it out on YouTube.
That's crazy.
Very nice.
So yeah, I mean, it was obviously a marketing ploy, but it seems to, you know, actually function. And you signed up and you had to sort of say which sort of types of bacon you liked. And then actually it had quite a good function. Instead of swiping, you sort of pressed on a yes button, and then the amount of time you held it for was like your sizzle rating.
Oh, that's good.
So you
that's
could like right. give them a mediocre half-cooked one, or you could like be like sizzling. I also found a thing called the Bacon Race, which is not an ethnic group, but the Great American Bacon Race. It's basically a 5K race organized by bacon enthusiasts, and there are various prizes. I think the winner of each age group gets a golden pig. And then there's free bacon tasting. It's basically sponsored by the bacon industry.
This is in America, right?
In America, yeah. In fact, they're all in Florida. There's one in Georgia and Atlanta, but they're all in the southeast.
Mm-hmm. Do you know that some of the 5Ks are accompanied by a 0.05K for quote-unquote people who really love bacon?
I did see that. And then there's like a virtual race where you can like do it from the comfort of your own home.
But there are quite a few foodie like marathons and runs and events. Like Vineyards do them a lot.
Oh, yeah.
They like do a mile, have a load of wine, do another mile, have a load of wine. Yeah. And like cheeses and stuff. Yeah. I don't know how these people do the eating and drinking silly amounts and running. I'd immediately stitch.
Yeah, definitely.
Whilst we're talking about the Americans' relationship with bacon, I didn't realise that New York has a really special history with pork production and bacon. So
New pork.
So we think that pigs were taken over to America by a Spanish explorer called Hernando de Soto, who brought 13 pigs in the 1500s. Part of the Colombian exchange.
So that's six breeding pairs and one to watch.
13th wheel.
One for him.
Anyway, so because they were delicious, indigenous people loved pork as well. And like pigs just proliferated across America really quickly.
No natural predators.
Well, not until we came along.
And they were also really important food and livestock for poor people because they were easy to feed. They'll eat all of your waste.
That's true.
Was it the case that they were basically, if you went to New York, they were kind of all over the street and they were running around?
Really?
And I guess it was almost like some countries where they have loads of stray dogs and cats or like the monkeys in Gibraltar or wherever it is. I think like New York just had pigs everywhere.
Wow. Yeah,
I can't believe we didn't see this in history films more often.
So rich New Yorkers started getting really annoyed about the pig problem, how many pigs there were just roaming around the city. And they thought that humans should be doing this cleanup job instead. So what they did as part of the gentrification of New York, they literally just like pushed these pigs further and further out to the outskirts of the city. Like, there were still kind of pigs wandering around, but like much further radius, which was really fucked up because these were like a lifeline for poor families in the city. If you had your own pigs, you could feed yourself really easily. You could make bacon, which lasts for a really long time. Or if you're really like in the shit, you could just sell a pig to a butcher. And because pork is in such high demand, you have like money instantly. Mm. And by getting rid of the pigs in New York, they basically made a working class that was really dependent on their employers. So like wealth inequality and social inequality got worse because you kind of took away the working class independence. Sure. It was really messed up.
And then they put one in the White House.
In the 1800s, Charles Dickens went over to New York and he wrote like basically an essay about how many pigs there were in the city and how crazy it was. So he says, they are never attended upon or fed or driven or caught. They're thrown to their own devices early in life. They're just like all over the place, roaming the streets.
They're like, hey, I'm pork in here.
Very nice.
Time now for our second lunchbox, and that is Manu.
I have brought my perfect breakfast.
Oh,
really?
Two fried eggs, 3 rashers of bacon, and some cigarettes.
Oh.
Balanced breakfast.
I will say right straight out of the bat as well is that Manu was making this breakfast before the podcast started and asked me how I'd like it displayed as the producer. And I said, I'll let you have creative freedom on that. And you've cooked 2 eggs and some bacon and not made a smiley face.
You
and
said
I actually just think, like, I don't understand why, so I'm just going to make that happen now.
Okay, you go for it. Aww, beautiful. So bacon and eggs, particularly bacon, is like the quintessential American breakfast because one dude decided it was going to be, which is so rare in the history of food. Normally, like, it takes generations of things to develop and then dishes to become a staple. There's a man called Edward Bernays who is...
Edward Bernays?
Yeah.
Did he also do the sauce?
He did not. So, unfortunately, it's Bernays.
Oh, okay.
But he is dubbed the father of public relations, the father of PR. He's an American dude. And there's a fantastic documentary on him by Adam Curtis in 2002 called The Century of the Self.
Oh.
It basically explores his influence on modern life, which is immense.
Really?
Bernays was Freud's nephew.
Oh,
So he'll also be related to Matthew Freud, the really big PR person.
Oh, Freud.
Who runs Freud's,
exactly.
The PR agency.
So using his uncle's theories of psychoanalysis, he developed a way to kind of like manipulate the public mind. And big companies would come to him and ask how to sell specific products.
Wow. That's so cool. His uncle came up with psychology and then the nephew monetized it. Yeah. That's so clever.
Is that not? I feel like he's being really proactive. So in the 1920s, he was hired by Beechnut Packing Company, who sold peanut butter, sweets, soup, and bacon. But the bacon wasn't selling very well. Classic combination.
It's a real,
So the Beechnut Packing Company came to him and was like, what do we do with all this bacon? Like, we need to sell it. Help. Help, Bernays. And he...
if only there was some kind of craze.
So he went and had a think. And he was like, okay, American people, they're not eating heavy breakfasts. Normally they're having something like orange juice or coffee or like a bit of cereal.
Breakfast cereal, exactly.
They're also, because they're always rushing out the door, like in every movie. They're always like, bye kids, I'm busy, I'm overworked.
There's always that huge like platter of gorgeous food and then the guy's
the dad's
just,
always like grabbing a piece of toast.
Like,
I've clearly got something to learn about family values in the next 90 minutes. The woman's just left there thinking, what the fuck am I going to do with all this food?
She eats it. So he was like, okay, how do we get people to eat more? How do we get them to eat heavy breakfasts?
Yeah.
And he was like, okay, who do people listen to? Doctors.
Okay.
So he advised that this company go to doctors and ask whether they thought that having a more kind of protein-rich, heavier breakfast was healthier compared to kind of like the light orange juicy, not very substantial, anyway.
And when you phrase it like that.
Exactly. So they did the survey. They contacted about 5,000 American physicians and about 4,500 of them wrote back saying, yes, obviously, it's better to eat a proper, nutritious, heavy breakfast. And they spun this and were like, 4,500 doctors agree you should eat bacon for breakfast. And then they ran with it, and it became this massive thing. And people actually, because it was being advised by doctors, clocked onto it and started eating more bacon. It was an overnight success. It was amazing. So the reason I brought cigarettes with me is because Bernays did a very similar thing with smoking.
Really?
So he
You're kidding. No, he's like the guy who invented ozone and
Thomas Midgley.
He's the Thomas Midgley of food.
So he was the person that got women smoking. Because for ages it was like not the done thing. It was associated with like looser women or sex workers.
Like
so with cigarettes, what he did was he decided to get a load of suffragettes to take cigarettes with them on a march, and got the press to take loads of photos of these women smoking.
Did they call them drag queens?
No, he called the cigarettes torches of freedom. Young women were like, oh, this is great. Like, instead of becoming a symbol of kind of immorality, it became a symbol of like rebellion and strength.
Well, I guess if the men were all smoking, then it's just like wearing trousers. It becomes like we're doing the masculine thing.
I want to see what they're doing. Yeah.
Exactly. So bacon and cigs. There you go.
I want to vote on the ballot paper by putting my cigarette out on my calendar. I really want.
But there's also another quite dark connection between bacon and cigarettes. In your research,
I suppose all these light fun ones we've been talking about.
Have you come across the nitrite problem in bacon?
No, go on, tell me what that is.
The WHO, the World Health Organization.
Who? Sorry.
That was so annoying.
I've been interrupting you so much.
Fantastic. They all put processed meats that contain nitrites, like bacon, in the same category as asbestos and smoking in things that give you cancer.
So it's basically on the hit list, basically.
It's really bad for you. So basically, nitrites in processed meats, they prevent the growth of nasties, like the bacteria that causes botulism.
But not the nasty that causes the cancer.
Exactly. But there's a really strong link between nitrite use and colon cancer. So there's loads of people who are trying to get people to make nitrite-free bacon, which is a really important thing.
How do you do that?
I think it's the kind of salts that you cure the meat in.
Yes. It's all about the nitrite salt, isn't it?
There is a way to do it that doesn't contain nitrite salt, and it's a lot healthier.
Because nitrites are a bit of a shortcut. They make it look pink as well, which is a selling point. Mm-hmm. It also, because no one wants to eat like grey bacon. It's just a cheaper way to, I think it takes less time to cure, maybe. Mm-hmm. I mean, we didn't know they were bad for a long time, but we're starting to find the strong links between bowel and colon cancer and then nitrites.
So if you can avoid meats that have been processed with E249 potassium nitrite or E250 sodium nitrite.
Those are my two favorite E numbers.
You'll be doing your gut a favor, probably.
My favorite is E620.
Was that MSG?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck yeah.
I actually can't believe you know some E numbers off my heart.
That's the only one.
It's the best E number. So yeah, that's how the Great American Breakfast.
Fascinating. So it's all from this one guy who sort of spun the
Edward Bernays.
PR.
On like bacon and kind of public perception and manipulation, post-Bernays during World War II, in the same way that when like Britain had a big drive to try and get women to donate old pots and pans for the war effort so they could use the metal, the US were trying to get American women to send in their bacon fat. There's a Disney propaganda cartoon that you can watch online.
Really?
And the voiceover says, a skillet of bacon grease is a little munitions factory. Every year, 2 billion pounds of waste kitchen fats are thrown away, enough glycerin for 10 billion rapid fire cannon shells.
Whoa.
So they were extracting the glycerin from the bacon fat. And they said that bacon fat should be strained and collected in a can, and then you take it to a butcher or a meat dealer and you get 4 cents a pound for the fat.
Oh, damn.
But I think nobody really participated in any big way because I think they were already using the fat at home, and also all the men were away, so women were really pretty stretched and they didn't really have time for this shit. So it wasn't really very successful. But the government has a lot to say about bacon, guys.
Speaking of bacon and death,
yes,
this is just a little snippet. In one of Brighton's cemeteries, there was a Robert Bacon buried next to a Florence egg.
That's beautiful.
But wait, there isn't bacon in Ex-Florentine.
Oh, Florence egg.
If you can find Robert bacon buried next to a
Benedict's egg.
Egg. Yeah. That would be better.
I'll dig in. I'll do some more research. If you don't hear from me from a week, that's what I'm doing. Did you realise that in America in 1973, the government had to mandate bacon windows?
What?
What do you think a bacon window is?
I'm a bacon Mac man, so I only use apple bacon. Is it like the Overton window, where it's like the amount of acceptable breakfast, what's acceptable for breakfast shifts
how,
over time.
How like burnt you like the bacon is, the bacon
what's
window.
The bacon window?
I mean, it's much more literal than that. It's basically, you know, American bacon is usually streaky. Mm-hmm. So they're strips, you can picture them, they've got like parallel layers of fat.
Yeah.
And then the one at the top is like the big layer of fat. Mm. So what manufacturers were doing, they were stacking them on top of each other, but overlapping slightly so that the bottom of the one higher up was covering the lower one's fat layer.
So they were hiding the fat, basically.
They were basically hiding the fat. And they would stack up, 10 rashers or whatever. Mm. And then over the top one, where you couldn't hide the fat because it was the top one, they would just put the whole label. So the effect was you couldn't see how fatty the bacon was because fat was something of a turnoff. This is the sort of era of low fat everything, which we now know is not very good for you because they were replacing it with sugar. And anyway, the US government got involved in 1973 and they drew up some legislation so that now you have to have a transparent opening to reveal at least 70% of the length. So basically, they mandated the bacon window. You can flip your packet to see a representative slice and see how fatty it is. Thanks, FDA.
Time for our third and final lunchbox, and that is mine.
Ooh.
And I have brought
a
bacon alternative.
Oh.
And this is Bananicum. How do I say it?
Need some work.
No, because it's not a banana, it's a banana. So it's Bananicum. Bananicum.
Bananicum.
I think Bananicum.
Okay.
I've got Bananicum. And I thought I'd bring some alternatives to classic bacon.
Yeah, because you don't like it.
Exactly. And I don't think I'm going to like this one either. I'll be honest with you. I haven't tried it yet. It is literally banana skins that have been peeled and the banana has been scraped off. And then I've marinated them in a mixture or concoction of soy sauce, maple syrup, and smoked paprika.
Oh, nice. Okay, so there's a bit more effort in than I was expecting.
Oh, yeah. And then they're fried, just like bacon.
It smells...
Man who's trying hers.
It's actually not that bad.
You say that about everything, Jack.
Okay,
I need a real opinion.
The whole thing in all at once. Very much not bacon. No. It's tasty.
It's all right, yeah.
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 See?
Come I mean, on. I think the part of the problem, I think, is it's so floppy still.
Yeah,
if it was harder.
True.
It's quite floppy.
Add some carcinogens. Then
we love it. I'm going to get cigarettes back out.
This is maybe the beginning of my journey to try and find an alternative to bacon that I like. I certainly am not picking this one. Mm-hmm. I was looking up all the different kinds of bacon, as they're often called.
Yep. That's a better name.
And, you know, you get the classic, the ones made of wheat or soy, which are mixed up and squashed into bacon shapes and then extruded and then dyed pink and then given fake streaks. And you're just like, you are putting all the effort into making something that looks like bacon and I really don't think it tastes anything like bacon. But there are quite a lot of different types.
Yeah, there's bacon, lamb bacon.
Oh, is that supposed to be mutton bacon?
Mutton bacon. So it's cuts of lamb that are taken from a similar place as pork bacon, so the fattier belly cut. And it's quite popular in Muslim countries.
I read it was a Scottish dish.
It is a Scottish dish.
Not that there aren't Muslims in Scotland, but there hasn't been historically.
But they actually promoted it in the UK during the Second World War as a kind of ration food. So I was looking at bacon, came across this paper by some researchers in Finland.
Oh, yeah.
Looking at why people still hate vegans.
Okay.
Apart from the fact, this is objectively a very bad dish. Okay. But you can eat, you can eat delicious food as a vegan and they're just like you and me. They're really lovely. They're all great. So this study was actually looking at the perceptions of vegan people rather than vegan food.
Okay.
So what they did is they got people to judge a load of imaginary shopping lists. And the only thing that changed on these lists was whether they included animal products or not. And they found that people judged the plant-based lists like really harshly. They imagined that they belonged to people who were like more moral and health conscious than others.
Wait, more moral? Yeah. Surely that should be seen as a good thing.
Yeah, but it did the opposite. It kind of turned.
Maybe that shows my biases.
Yeah, like, it's like
the opposite of bacon mania, right? True. Like, you people connect and have a bit of joy over fun over like how we're drinking and we're smoking weed versus judging the people who are doing like quote unquote better and more moral and better for the planet.
But that was exactly right. So they think that one of the reasons why people judge vegans harshly is that they make us feel bad about ourselves because we know we should be eating like this or reducing our meat intake and we don't. So instead we lash out at the people who are making us feel bad. And then the other thing is because there are still all of these negative associations around veganism and eating plant-based diets, there's like a kind of in and out group. And we realize that vegans still have a bit of bad press and we don't want to be associated with that. So we go even more the other way. So it's kind of to do with like group identity as well, which is really interesting. But it's mad that this still happens today.
Well, I think it is because everyone's always like, what's our generation's racism going to be? Like, our generation thinks it's okay. And then by the time we're 80, all of our grandkids are getting very upset because we won't let it go. And the obvious one is always vegetarianism, veganism. Yeah. We're going to be like, that's going to be acceptable. Like,
Grandpa, didn't you know that they were suffering? And we'd be like, well, yeah, we did, but we just sort of didn't care.
Yeah.
It's just kind of, you know. Yeah.
But because we know that's coming, we're already being like, piss off. I want to live my life. Like, we're like pre.
Get your bacon while you
we're
can.
Like pre backlashing.
Yeah. Well, whilst I was doing this research, and me and my partner was making sausages in the kitchen and there's so much meat everywhere.
Yeah, if you want to know how like morally corrupt Manu is, she's dating a fucking butcher.
Yeah. So sorry, vegans.
I feel like there is a future where we can all live in harmony and happiness. Mm. And it doesn't involve us compromising, which is the only way for us to be happy and live in harmony.
Innovation, that's what we need.
Stem cell bacon. It's the only way forward, guys, stem cells.
I think they need some marketing there.
So yes, they're going to need to come up with a nice name and a pretend farm and a pretend farmer so the waitress can put it on their packaging.
Bernays. So there's this like lab-grown.
Yeah, it's growing pig stem cells in bioreactors to make muscle and fat tissue.
Wow.
So they're never conscious or alive animals. They're literally just like raw meat grown by the rasher. Much more environmentally friendly because it's using a lot less land and lower emissions and no slaughtering. It's very, very, very early stages. Mm-hmm. But
there might be some animal suffering. I mean, how does the stem cell arrive?
That's true. But potentially, I guess you only need one donation and then you can grow. Yeah, it's like we need a Henrietta Lack of pigs.
Yeah. It's a bit like
there's also even maybe more natural there's a type of algae that cooks into something that kind of tastes like bacon.
Okay. Is it green?
No, it's red. It's red. It's a type of red marine algae called dulse. I think dulse. Have you heard of this?
Yeah, I've heard of it. Yeah. It's in Irish, Northern Irish dishes, isn't it?
It's like, so it's been around for a really long time. People in coastal regions in Ireland and Iceland and bits of Scotland, they've eaten it for at least 1,000 years. It's mentioned in medieval texts and things like that. But in 2015, scientists discovered a new strain of it. And it's quite fast growing, so it's farmable. Oregon State University are studying it. And basically, when you fry it, it tastes like bacon, apparently.
Ooh,
and they discovered it by accident because they were trying to cultivate...
Oh, no, I dropped my bacon. I'm on the coast.
But they were trying to make fish food, like a potential green kind of aquaculture sauce, and fried it. Someone tasted it. Hey, I don't know how you accidentally go... Like, somebody had to taste the fish food.
I read all about the Dunmow Flitch trials. Have you heard of these guys?
Oh,
no.
I have.
So there's like a village, it's very near Stansted Airport, actually. It's in Essex, called Great Dunmow. And they've had this tradition for 900 years. And we don't actually know when it started, but basically Geoffrey Chaucer was talking about it in his Canterbury Tales of the 1380s or 90s, right? So 14th century at least. And he doesn't explain what it is, i.e. he expects the reader to understand. But basically, it's kind of a test of your fidelity. So nobody really knows where it starts. The legend is that there was like a landowner who wanted to, you know, dressed as a pauper and then managed to convince someone that they should stay married. And he gave them a flitch of bacon. So basically, a flitch is an old English term for a whole half of a pig. Well, you then scoop out the innards and...
Whoa.
Which half?
And, well, either half. Oh, you mean left or right or top
it's
or bottom?
It's left or right, I guess.
Yeah, it is left or right. So you, a bit macabre, but you slice it down the middle.
So you get a bit of everything.
Yeah, a bit of everything, yeah. But like, this is a phenomenal wealth in sort of 1380s. So in order to win this flitch of bacon, you had to prove to a jury that you and your wife had been happily married for a year and a day and not had any impure thoughts or regret. And yeah, basically the thing died out around the 1750s.
Oh. So it briefly died out and they went from Flitch trials to witch trials and then back to Flitch trials again.
But it was rekindled in the 1850s by a book which was called A Flitch of Bacon. And this kind of was a big popular success. And yeah, it became much more like a mock trial in the 1800s. Right. And it's a tradition that may well have existed across England, but has died out everywhere except in Dunmow. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it happens every leap year. It was kind of often used as a sort of misogynist joke platform. So in 1714, The Spectator, which I didn't realise was quite so long, said that only two people...
Spectator. I can't even remember what spec means now. I've forgotten what spec means. But like,
anyway, they said that only two people had won the Flitch in the last century, quoting... The first was a sea captain and his wife, who since the day of marriage had not seen each other till the day of the flame. Ha ha ha. And the second was an honest pair in the neighbourhood. The husband was a man of plain good sense and peaceable temper. The woman was mute. Wow. So there's an oath, and it dates from 1751, and you have to say it at the Dunmow Flitch Trials.
Oh, and have you got it?
I've got it here.
Oh, let's read it out at the end.
Yeah, let's do.
Nice.
We'll all swear the oath.
There's like a film of the 1950s starring Petula Clark, who I didn't realise was still alive. She sung Downtown.
Yeah, she's still alive now. Wow.
92. And then there's also a short-lived game show in 1965 on Southern TV.
Oh, this is back in the regional days.
I looked at the map and Southern TV basically covered like East Dorset, Hampshire and West Sussex and a little bit of Surrey.
Ooh.
So it's basically like the area around the Isle of Wight inland. Mm. And it was called the 7-Year Flitch.
Nice. Very good. Very good. Southern TV. That is it for this week's edition of Lunchbox Envy.
You can follow our socials for foodie facts and podcast updates. We are on X, Facebook, Instagram and TikTok at Lunchbox Envy Pod.
Yeah, that's right. And you can also get in touch and send us your facts, recipes and questions by emailing us. Lunchbox@qi.com is the address.
We will leave you with the German word Kummerspeck, which describes weight that you put on from eating too much when feeling sorry for yourself. And it literally translates as grief bacon. But I think to play us out, Jack, will you read us the full oath from the Dunmow Flitch Trials?
Oh, with pleasure. Which accent would you like?
I want West Country, please.
You shall swear by the custom of our confession that you never made any nuptial transgression. Guys, compose yourself. Okay. Since you were married, man and wife, by household brawls or contentious strife, or otherwise in bed or at board, offended each other in deed or in word, or since the parish clerk said amen, wished yourselves unmarried again, or in a 12-month and a day, repented not and thought in any way, but continued true and in desire, as when you joined hands in holy choir, if to these conditions without all fear, of your accord, you will freely swear. I'm losing it. A gammon of bacon you shall receive, and bear it hence with love and good leave. For this is our custom at Dunmow well known. Though the sport be ours, the bacon's your own.
Aww. We will see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Lunchbox Envy was hosted by Jack Chambers, Manu Onrio, and produced by me, Alex Bell. This has been a quite interesting podcast.